What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to The Katie Helper Show, and I'm your host, Katie Helper. If you like the show, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and as always, remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. To support the show, visit patreon.com/thekatiehelpershow, where for just $1 a month, you can help make the show happen. And for $5 a month, you'll qualify for great bonus content, including an alternative podcast feed and rarely seen clips that aired on our live shows. So honored to have Mindahi Basida on the stream. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Of course. I'm just going to share with people your very impressive biography. Mindahi is the director of the Original Nations Program at the Fountain and a member of the Mother Earth delegation. He's an executive member of the Alliance Guardians of Mother Earth and a spokesperson of the recently created Grand Council of the Eagle and the Condor. He's also the general coordinator of the Otomi Regional Council of the High Lerma River Basin in Mexico that promotes the rights of nature and Mother Earth, as well as the rights to self-determination of original nations. As if that weren't enough, he holds a PhD in rural development from the Universidad Autónoma Metropolitana, and his scholarship addresses subjects such as the state and indigenous peoples, intercultural education, collective intellectual property rights, and traditional knowledge, sacred sites, saving Mother Earth, and ancestral wisdom. So thank you so much. Please share with us what your impressions were of COP.
Thank you. Thank you very much. For the beginning, it was very difficult to arrive to COP26 because of the restrictions that we face as original nations and peoples, leaders, to be present at COP. Not every single thing was in English. And many people don't even speak English, so they had to ask for help, support. And once there, many other restrictions were given. You had to take every single day these COVID tests, the antigens. Yeah. And I think it's a good move to secure the health within the blue zone and the green zone, and even in independent gatherings and summits. But I can tell you that I was surprised how many people were attending COP26 and the delegations that arrived. There was a time that we couldn't go in very freely because, so many people around. But regarding COP26 and the results and the ongoing discussions, we can say that it has a history in the past. I was in the Earth Summit in 1992 when this agreement was signed. One of the three binding documents were signed, and at that time I was very hopeful and I was very. How can you say, very motivated that the governments came together because of what we were feeling already, that there was a problem with this anthropocentric way of thinking. But after 30 years and after 26 COPs, we see that we have not advanced, and we should. And we have lost a lot of biodiversity, a lot of cultures. So it means that we have lost biocultural heritage. And as you know, there is a risk because of this climate crisis, climate change. There is also an ecological crisis that put at risk at least 1 million species. And it's very well known that we as original nations, we want to always support anything that the governments want to carry out in for the care of life. But we are not taking into consideration enough. We are not a party. You know, we are just like people who is beginning to be understood because we have the ancestral wisdom, ancestral knowledge, how to relate to Mother Earth and nature. So this is why we are now very concerned, because now we have seen that the financial institutions around COP, they are very powerful. Very powerful. You can see who are they in the, you know, they have pavilions in the blue zone. And they are like the bosses of many nation states. They orchestrate anything that is negotiated. So we know that fossil fuels are danger, but still they are investing in fossil fuels. They are carrying out pipelines, and they are not just around the fossil fuels. They are still around the what we call the genetic resources and traditional knowledge, and also the rare earths. So what is going on? This is about dominion code. They want to continue doing business as usual. Can you believe it that even around the carbon offsets, they want to put the whales in the, they want to commodify whales and elephants and everything. And it sounds rational in the business arena, but for us it's just, how can we say, it's just a way of very bad things that when you treat nature just as a commodity. And for us, nature is sacred. And you can see when they name like natural resources, everything is natural resources, even humans.
Right.
How do they call capital, human capital?
Human capital, yeah.
Yeah, and all of that, we know, you know, even water is a resource in these negotiations.
Right.
And for us, water is sacred.
Yeah.
It's not a resource. It's sacred. So we are very disappointed, let's say, because in writing, it sounds really good that it looks like we are advancing. But when you don't meet what you are committed, and it's what has happened in the past, so we don't have, we are not secure that it's going to happen. Even if it's going to happen, we are late. We are late. Because all about climate change is about mitigation and adaptation. Because it's coming.
Right.
And it's really coming. All of these disasters are coming. So let's prepare for that. But we as original nations and peoples, we are going to do the work we are doing. And it's not easy. It's a lot of work that we carry out. As many people know already, scientists and the UN and other institutions are acknowledging this deep relationship that we have with nature. That's why not just biodiversity, but cultural diversity. So biocultural heritage, 80% of this biocultural heritage is in indigenous territories. But let's not take it for granted. As I said, it's a lot of work. And it's a way of living. It's a way of relationship. It's in a reciprocity way of doing this. And it's about ethical and moral issues that we, how we relate to what it was life. So now they are announcing these big quantities, 100,000 million to put in the global south. And especially for indigenous peoples, they want to put 1,500 million euros or $1,700 million to give to the indigenous communities. But you know, they didn't ask us to whom they are going to give this money, to whom. So we really need to sit at the table in the decision taking processes. Because otherwise, this money could go to the, you know, to the pro carbon offset communities, because there are in the indigenous community there are pro red. So it is happening because you know the greenwashing.
Yes,
it's also there in our communities, and we are suffering for that. So this is what I can tell you in general. We can see that our presence, even though with this, has grown, because now the media is taking us seriously, not just in the official venue, but also in the independent events. And I can tell you that TV channels, journals, and newspapers are asking more and more press conference and asking to indigenous leaders what is going on in the communities and how we see these global negotiations.
Yeah.
But these negotiations are just taking the same kind of paradigm as before, because some countries are saying, yes, we are going to do this, we are going to divest about fossil fuels. But, you know, it's just rhetorics.
Right.
It's just a way of saying, we are going to do this and this and this other. And the 2030 commitment, we are going to arrive to 2030 and we are going to be worse than we are today. So, in this case, we call upon civil society, communities, and people, even in the financial world, that they really are hearing us, that we need to change our ways of doing, our ways of feeling, our ways of acting, because we need to act now. This is not for tomorrow. It's from now, today. Because tomorrow is too late. I mean, it's a process. It's a process, but you need to act from now. So that's what we have been seeing. And I found in many places more solidarity with indigenous original nations, more solidarity, more than before, because civil society is beginning to understand. Global citizens are beginning to understand that we have a key element in this in these discussions, because you know, as original nations and peoples, we have always brought these ancestral principles, wisdom, and principles. You know, like. Reverence to Mother Earth, respect, responsibility. And it's what we are asking to the governments, be responsible. Not just talk, blah, 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 blah. but be responsible about your acts and really meet your objectives, meet what you have written and what you have committed. Because, you know, many people is going to suffer, is already suffering, and not just people, species, animals, territories, and the sea, and the Father Sky, as we call Father Sky, is also suffering because of what we are putting in the atmosphere. So all of that is what we have seen in the COP26. And I feel that there is more common ground for a big movement, especially with the young people, with children. They are beginning to understand is where we see change. But also some governments are beginning to say, hey, we need to do something, really, because this is all about carbon economies, and we cannot do that. We cannot commodify every single thing in or every single being around the world. Yes.
And what was it that you hoped to accomplish by attending COP?
For the beginning, I was intending to speak with the financial sector. And we did. We spoke with some bankers. We spoke with some very influential people, even from the IMF. But we saw something that some of them, they are open to listen. Some of them still are hard to, you know,
reach.
To reach. And or even their positions were very rational, you know, very, very rational. And they don't understand about spirituality, the sacred connection with nature. And that's the reason they are just in this addiction for growth. The GDP is all what they see. And we cannot think about that. We must think about the good living, about happiness for life, happiness in life. So they don't understand this. They just understand about growth.
And yeah, can you talk more about greenwashing?
Yes. See, there is this carbon markets, you know, and they say that now, because of the in the 2007, it was born with the Kyoto Protocol, the clean development mechanisms, how they could really raise consciousness about creating some markets for market solutions around nature, how we can save the forest, how we can save rivers and all what is life, but in the market. So then they saw that they had to create a mechanism for the carbon offsets. And about that, it was born the red and the, later on the red clause for reforestation and all what it means to bring these offsets to nature. But then now they are, because there has been so many problems about those mechanisms. See, for example, some communities where these carbon offsets are being applied. Well, some communities, they don't have access anymore to the traditional ways of living, because they are not allowed to go because of conservation, you know. They are not allowed to hunt or to bring medicinal plants. So they are forbidden. In other cases, they cut the original jungles or the original forest, and they plant for sequestration, carbon sequestration purposes. So they eliminate the diversity, biodiversity, and they put monoculture plantations of trees. And in other places, when there is money, it arrives very little money to the communities, and it arrives just to some of them, some of the members. So that creates division, because in communities, you know, everything is communal. And well, when they see that some people are receiving, it creates a lot of problems within the communities. Plus, there is something else with now the so-called nature-based solutions. You know what is happening? It's all about land market. Because when some company puts money to to continue emitting the carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, they can pay for that, and they can continue doing the same thing. So it's like there's a word for that. It's like in the indulgences. They buy indulgences. You know, when they pay.
Indulgences?
Yes. So they can continue doing the same scenes.
Right.
Like you're right.
Yeah.
So that's what is happening. But beyond that, people who is saying, oh, we are buying those carbon offsets in that country, territory, and at the end, it's about who owns the land. So that's very problematic, because as many original nations and peoples, we don't have collective titles to the land, to the territory, then it's going to be more difficult for land demarcation. And this is what is causing that nature-based solutions are false solutions. This is exactly because they are creating more problems than they are solving. So we might be interested in doing this, but in partnership, in the decision, in the decision taking processes in the table. But if we are not taking into consideration just whatever they want to apply from one country to another or from the markets, and we are not taking into consideration, this is new colonialism. This is a green colonialism. It's what it is, because it's a way of colonization and it's a way of dominion. Now about the so-called nature-based solutions. This is about that. So these millions of dollars that they are trying to bring to the communities or to the peoples, to whom they are going to put this money. Maybe this is going to create more problems than solving the problems, because we do it for love, for the care of life, for love to Mother Earth. But when you put a lot of money, and there is no protocols, community protocols, then you create more problems than you solve problems. So it's not that we don't need financial aid, but we need to establish first biocultural protocols before taking any action towards anything, any community or any conservation way of doing.
Yeah, because then it also becomes about like charity, not about justice.
Yeah, and charity, what it creates charity? It creates, we are not begging. We are not begging.
Right.
We need to be acknowledged.
Right.
But we are not begging for anything. We need to be taken into consideration as peoples, subjects of rights, inherent rights. But we are not begging anything.
Yeah, I'm saying without protocols, it just becomes like it's like the whims of rich people. It becomes, instead of being a question of justice and fairness, it becomes a question of charity, which it's not charity, because these are debts that are owed.
Yeah.
And there's...
You know, some people have been talking about the ecological debt. But there is also a debt towards original nations.
Yeah.
You know, not just because of treaties signed in the past, but because of the, let's say, the service that we provide for the care of life. But we are not talking about just economic debt. We are talking about moral debt. There is a debt towards original nations and peoples. So how can we really create a new paradigm, a paradigm that is based in ancestral wisdom? Well, in taking us into consideration in the decision-taking processes, always, always, as partners, not just as depositaries of what we have been doing for millennia, but we are going to continue doing that. But please, we are here and we are alive and we deserve respect. And we also respect recognition, acknowledgement of what we are, who we are. Because now the problem is not just our problem. And we are tired. We cannot do it ourselves because of the mining companies are over our territories. We need support. We need support from every single sector. You know, we need really that support that can bring us peace, and not just peace, can bring dignity, and can bring joint responsibilities. Because this is not just my problem. It's your problem, and it's everybody's problem. So we need to this call to be very strong unification process. We don't want integration. We want unification. Because integration is homogenization, and it's very dangerous. But because it kills. It kills a lot of possibilities for life systems. So we are seeing that this COP26 has been an exercise for many, just to continue doing business as usual. But for us, it's an opportunity to be heard and to come together with other actors that really want to change this way of destruction. Because as we say, it's a human problem. We have misbehaved in general. And even in our communities, we are facing that problem because the young people, sometimes they are just living the ancestral wisdom of doing things. And now there is also corruption. And corruption is number one. Because when you don't meet your responsibilities, there is corruption there. Just imagine in Paris, the Paris Agreement. It was a beautiful document, you know, to put no more than 1.5 centigrades in the atmosphere. But now we are seeing that many governments did, many governments, they didn't, most of the governments, they didn't meet the objectives. So that's corruption. So we need to really struggle. We need to work hard against corruption at all levels, from the community to the global north, to the global south, to any single nation state.
So was COP, it sounds like COP wasn't very inviting or accommodating. It didn't have things that weren't in English. Did it make an effort to hear indigenous representatives?
Well, we had a pavilion, the indigenous pavilion, and there were some talks with some governments, with some contact points, but in general, still very, very loose. You know, they don't want to hear. And even when some people were trying to be heard, the governments left the place, you know?
Right.
And it's very sad. It's very sad because that exactly represents not just the deep ignorance, but it represents the power relations. And it represents that they want to continue doing this as, you know, not just the greenwashing, but also they don't want to commit themselves to really take into action what they are committed to. So many of the sessions that we had, we didn't have even translators, you know, and many people spoke other languages. So this is how we are here at this time. And, you know, there's going to be other COPs in the future. But we are seeing that many people have been in COPs saying, oh, I have been in 3 or 4 or 6 or 7 COPs. What is the difference? What is the difference that you brought to the COP? And that's the reason we were marching with people in the Young March and in the Long March. And many people around the world were marching because they noticed that governments are not being enough committed to the target. And I think change has to come also from citizens, global citizens. In the marches, we saw children, we saw young people, we saw families, we saw many, many people around, but we didn't see politicians. I didn't see any politician. I just saw common people. Maybe they were around, maybe, but I didn't see them because they were too busy. And they don't want to hear what it is said in the streets. You know, they don't see. They don't want to see. So even I was very concerned about seeing some politicians, former presidents in the COP. I was very concerned. And they are highly corrupted, some of them I saw.
Like who?
You know, like Felipe Calderón and others from Mexico. And,
yeah.
Well, I cannot say
Obama
was there, but he had the thing in the United States and other places, you know. But you can see former politicians still around. Why didn't they do what they had to do when they had power? Now, what are they trying to do? We don't need their presence in where they don't belong to. So we need really politicians that are committed for the care of life. This is the time. There is no other time because we are not talking about the future, just about the future. We are talking about the past, and mostly we are talking about the present because it's what we are living here. And this is in between. And this is what we are suffering. It's not just the future generations that are going to suffer from climate change. We are already suffering. The floods, the fires, we are suffering from every single, even, you know, the disease that we, respiratory disease that we have in many places, not just in the big cities, but in small communities because of fossil fuels extraction. So all of that.
And what is the significance of the story of the eagle and the condor?
Yes, we have a very beautiful prophecy because 500 years ago, a little bit more, when the colonization began in the Americas, peoples were put apart, disappeared, destroyed, and many borders were put. So the prophecy said and says that there was going to come the time when the peoples of the original peoples of the north and original peoples of the south would come together. So the eagle and the condor peoples would fly together, and that would bring the new dawn and the new hope for life and the new action to be together and defend life. So that's what the Eagle and the Condor Grand Council is. It's composed by elders from the whole continent of the Americas. And this is what we are bringing, the ancestral wisdom to be heard at any international meeting arena, or to be heard by some politicians or some NGOs or even the financial world, if they want to hear. That's the reason the Eagle and the Condor Council was conformed, to bring this knowledge how to behave in front of life.
And you mentioned young people. Can you share a little bit about your daughter and what she does in the world?
Yes, my daughter is Sigue Bastida, and she's a climate activist. And she came to New York. She went to New York with us because we had a chance to bring the family. And at that time, there was a flood in my community. But I had a chance to work with the Center for Earth Ethics, led by Karena Gore, Al Gore's daughter. It was a beautiful chance because Then I was given some classes at Unitological Seminary, also helping some professors at Teachers College at Columbia University. And then she began to study later on at the high school. And she joined this wonderful environmental club. So it's when in 2015, there was this big march, and she brought more than 600 of her classmates to the march. And later on, she was already organizing another march for more than 300,000 people. So she became very involved because she sees how her future is you know, it doesn't seem good. And so she began to organize herself with other young people, not just in the United States, but also around the world. And she joined the Fridays for Future movement with Greta Thunberg. When Greta came to New York, she was already an activist, and she was the host for Greta. So later on, she was known as the Greta Thunberg of the Americas. But Sigue is quite, you know, she's quite an activist. She has this philosophy based in original principles, original nations, peoples. So she's been growing little by little, and she was invited to many, many summits. And now you see that she spoke before the world leaders, not just under the call of Biden administration, but also in the COP26.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to. You guys should come on together. That would be amazing. And what about your journey? Can you talk to us about how you became the activist you are today?
Yes. I can tell you that ever since I was young, and we were struggling for self-determination for my peoples in Central Mexico. And then the Zapatista movement arose in 1994 when the NAFTA took place. But we were struggling so much, and then some of my friends were already environmentalists. You know what is called environmentalist. But we bring this in our blood because we love Mother Earth. So I joined them in the, there was a group called RAG, Red Ambiental Juvenil, the Youth Network of Mexico. And I was one of the founders as well. So I was chosen to be in a gathering in Mexico City, and then I was chosen to go to Costa Rica for the prep of their summit. And then we began to talk about all what we have been seeing as problematics, like the pollution of the rivers, pollution of the air, and how many species were disappearing, mammals, big mammals. So I brought to this movement the discussion about how the knowledge or traditional knowledge or the ancestral wisdom of original nations, it was very relevant for the conservation of life. So it was in 1992 when I was invited to represent the young indigenous peoples in Rio, but also representing the Latin American youth. And we wrote the declaration that we wrote in Costa Rica because it was the Youth 92 movement. It's when I realized that it was not just my problem in my community, in my country. It was a worldwide problem. And it was the first time the United Nations acknowledged the traditional knowledge to be very important for conservation of life. It was just an statement. But now we are seeing that even the environmental laws, they are very permissive, you know? And we need rights of nature. And we need Earth jurisprudence. And we need also to the ecocide law to be acknowledged as a crime. Because governments or companies need to be accountable for the crimes that they produce. So when I was very young, I began to realize how these problems were growing more and more and more. And I have a big example in the communities where I was born. The Lerma River begins, the longest river in Mexico. It's highly, highly polluted. So we saw that we needed to study why it's so polluted. Because in the 70s, in 1970s, many industries arrived to Toluca Valley from all over the world. Nissan, Chrysler, DuPont, Bayer, whatever. Name it. And they were powering their waters, industrial waters, and horrible waters into the river. So they killed the river. There was zero oxygen. We began to carry out the studies in 1999 with some people from, young people from UBC, the University of British Columbia, and us that we were already studying the river. And we saw that the diversity was already gone. So we began to study as well the wetlands. So from that study, we were able to present a very important document to protect the wetlands of the Lerma, of the Lerma area. So we had to go even to with the president at that time, the president Vicente Fox, to present our demand. So it was approved because it's a federal acknowledgement and it's a federal natural protected area now. But we struggle so much because the COFEMER, which is the regulatory body to protect the private companies, you know, agenda, they were against that because they were looking at this land, the wetlands, a place to build more factories.
Mm.
So at the end, we succeeded in 2001. But it was a long, long, long walk and very difficult. In any way, I can tell you that for many years, even from the 90s to the 2020, yeah, until now, we have not stopped about protecting life. But it's so difficult because there are so many interests, economic interests, that they are just not taking into consideration biodiversity or cultures. So that's what has happened. So I began to work around that and to be very active. And it's what we have been doing for several years. And we are going to continue doing that, no doubt.
Great. Thank you so much. Anything else you want to say? You've been so generous with your time, and I'd love to have you back on.
I think one thing that I want to express myself is that we want that people get more involved because it's about honoring our ancestors, but also the future generations to come. And it's not just about what future we are delivering to the future generations. It's also about what future we are delivering to Mother Earth. We need to change this anthropocentric way of thinking to a more ecocentric way of thinking, where Mother Earth and all living beings, they have the right also to thrive and live. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And any place that you want to make sure people go to find out more, or organizations to support, or
the fountain.earth. Yeah, and the timekeepers.org. And thank you so much for this beautiful opportunity, because people sometimes they know that there is a lot of problems, but we know that we are the problem, but we also can be the solution.
Right.
And this is the time, and the time is now.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And come back on.
Thank you. Thank you, Katie. Thank you.
And someone asked if there are any alliances with Bolivia that you can bring. I guess, any governments you're working with in particular?
Yes, Bolivia. Bolivia is a wonderful country that we are working with. And we are going to continue working with Bolivia, and also if Mexico, my country, wants to also to work. And we really ask to the government that they leave in peace fossil fuels. We know that there is a transition, but we need really the energetic transition that we really need it, because life is at a risk. And also we are working with some senators and some deputies from other countries. And these beautiful people, we are working with Princess Esmeralda from Belgium. She's a great activist. I want to acknowledge we are working with Ecocide, with Yojumet, and many others that are bringing the definition of ecocide to the international arena. And I just want to thank everyone who is doing something for the care of life and Yeah, this unification process. So governments are called, we need them to show and really to commit themselves. If they want to work with us, always welcome. We also want to work with any government who wants to change their way of thinking, the way of doing, and the way of acting. So there's a good chance now, and even with the financial world, because what we think is that this is the time to for the institutions to change, to transcend. If any institution is not taking care for life, they must change or disappear. They have to disappear because we cannot allow anymore to that life is destroyed. We cannot. Because it's not just about us as humans. It's about flourishing diversity.
Thank you so much. This is really amazing.
Thank you, Katie.
Have a great night and come back whenever you want. You
thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for this beautiful time.
Thanks again for listening to The Katie Helper Show. To hear the rest of that discussion, please join the Patreon at patreon.com/The Katie Helper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Helper Show. If you like the show, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And as always, we remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. Our show is produced by me, Katie Helper, Nick Palm. Brad Bloom is our audio engineer and an associate producer on the show. Our researcher is Joshua Bregman. And our theme song is by the band Cordova. See you next time.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.